well, that was fun, right? Crash, boom, yeah. Yeah, so I don't know if you read Jessica's bio on our newsletter, but she just did a 6-month tour in India? And we were actually there at the same time, but in different parts of the country, so it's kind of cool. We need to talk afterwards. We need to give you a heart pin, too. These are from India. Yeah, okay. Anyway, welcome, everybody. It's great to see you here today on this Father's Day, and just wonderful to be here to celebrate this Sunday with all of you. I wanted to start by talking about something that some of you who know me well know this to be true, and this is kind of like to help us remember, and also if you're a new person, it's to kind of warn you about this center. a little disclaimer. So some people tell me, mostly the musicians actually, that travel around to lots of different churches tell me that I do science of mind, this philosophy is the science of mind teaching, that I do it slightly differently than other ministers. Some people see nodding their heads, okay. And I would say that part of that is because of my bizarre sense of humor, which often borders on irreverent. Not sure if it'll go there today, we'll just see what happens. It's not up to me. I have no control over it. And then the other thing is that I tend to focus a lot more on mystery versus manifestation. In the past, a lot of science of mind churches were teaching that, you know, like the secret, you know, you think these thoughts and you can have what you want. And that is useful to a certain point, but it only takes us so far, and sometimes it creates dependency on the effects of the world to bring us our good, when really the source of our good is internal. It's our connection to the divine, which has actually, connection is even not the right word for it, because it's who we are. We don't even really need to connect to it, because it's already here. So I focus a lot on the idea of absolute reality, that there is this one absolute reality that encompasses everything, that is omnipresent and infinite. And if it's omnipresent and infinite, there can't be absolute reality and something else. Everything is part of this absolute reality. And by everything, and I think this is the part that really makes this center a little bit different, we mean everything. We don't mean just the pretty parts of ourselves, or we don't mean the pretty parts of the world. We teach, as a lot of science of mind churches do, but we do it, I think, to a greater extent here, we teach that everything is part of this thing that we call the absolute reality. In the words of, it's either St. Francis or Rabia al-Basra, different authors for this, but nothing exists outside the walls of this place called existence. There is only existence, and we are part of it, and that's what it is. So that's how I'm a little different. If that's what you were not expecting, or if that disappoints you, I got some recommendations for you. Church up the street, you know, whatever. can go. we're gonna do our best to embrace some of those topics that I talked about today. The name of my talk fits into this idea that everything is part of absolute reality, even the parts of ourselves that are not particularly attractive or pretty, or the parts of ourselves that we're ashamed of. Because everything is absolute reality. The name of my talk is Downward Facing God, instead of Downward Facing Dog. You know what Downward Facing Dog is, right? It looks sort of like this, but I can't really do it, so yeah. And I asked Karen to do it, because she's a yoga teacher, but she's got big old slits in her skirt, and it looked kind of like a hussy, you know? So. Yeah, Fred enjoyed it. Yeah, whatever. So, and we did it backstage. Yeah. So, anyway, see what I mean? Yeah. So, this message is based on this, partially on this book called The Holy Trinity and the Law of Three by Cynthia Bourgeau. I've been speaking about the Law of Three for the last couple of months because it's become sort of a part of this center, which is also a little different than some other science of mind centers. And the Law of Three, basically, in case you missed one of those talks, or any of those talks, or all of them, the Law of Three is the idea that in any creative process, there is an affirmative factor, or an affirming factor, and a denying factor, and then a reconciling factor that brings the two of them together. They are in like polar opposites to each other, and the reconciling factor brings them together to create a new creation. The obvious metaphor for that many people use is man, woman, child, right? Because of the reproductive process. And then the child is a new creation that can go off and make new creations on its own. my husband, who is somewhat of an expert on this topic, made me promise to make sure that I was a little clearer about describing the affirming and the denying factor. Some people think that affirming is good and denying is bad. That's not true. One is just force one, the other is force two. And he also told me that the denying factor is also sometimes seen as the discerning factor. Like, maybe this is not a good idea, so the denying factor comes up and discerns. Or maybe it's a good idea, so we'll meet in the middle and see what third can come through, right? So it's like that. And in class, we discovered, my students taught me, as they always do, we discovered that the affirming factor, force number one, is love. That the denying factor, force number two, is also love. Okay, get that? Force number two is also love. And the reconciling force, number three, is also love. And the outcome is also love. It is all love. So anything that is working with us, seems to be working against us, anything about ourselves that we are disappointed in and that we're ashamed of, it is all love wanting to be revealed through this and other processes. You know, and we work on these processes because it's a good idea to be able to look at our sacred inadequacies or our sacred flaws, as well as our sacred triumphs and sacred joys. It's good to be able to look at that, at both of those, but particularly in terms of looking at the sacred flaws or sacred inadequacies, because I have found in my own experience that what you repress tends to regress, and then it tends to play out. You know, there's that saying, what you do not transform will transmit to the entire world, and you'll piss everybody off in a big way, you know, and you'll just make it worse for yourself. So that's what today's talk is about. We're looking at sacred inadequacy in terms of the law of three, and we're actually going to have somebody demonstrate this principle, how it worked in his life, with a Father's Day story. So I would like to call up Fred Mondragon, the grandfather of us all. Here we go.
Good morning.
Good morning.
You might wonder why they're playing Jaws. I'll tell you in a minute. Anyway, my name is Fred Mondragon. Bonnie called me up or sent an email on Monday or Tuesday and say, how would you like to do your Father's Day talk? So I said, sure, I'll do it, you know. So a few years ago, I did it like 5 years in a row. And we're getting to think people were tired of it. So it's been about 4 or 5 years since I've done it. And so when she called up, I had to start thinking about it again. Okay, what am I going to say and how am I going to fine-tune it? But what I did was I thought, okay, what did I learn this time from this talk? And so I wrote it down, what I learned, and I'll tell you at the end of what I learned from this talk. Okay, here we go. My name is Fred Mondragon. I've been a practitioner here for 20 years. I get my 20-year pin this year, along with my wife, Karen. So I've been around a long time, okay. So my wife and I have 4 daughters, 2 sons. We have 10 grandchildren. The oldest one is 35, the youngest one is 3, and he hangs out with me, which helps keep me young. And we have 4 great-grandchildren. My daughters call me Daddy. My sons call me Dad. Most of my grandkids call me Gramps, except for the last one, Eric, who's stubborn. He calls me Grandpa. Okay, that's enough about me. This story is about my dad. Okay. My dad was born in 1920 in Antonito, Colorado, and his name is Jose Bernabe Mondragon. During World War II, he came to California and served in the war. He's a piano player, and he played all over the for the Army guys. When he got out, he became a bass player, okay? And he played with a lot of jazz musicians. I don't know if you know Stan Getz, Shorty Rogers, Chet Baker, those guys. In those days, okay, just probably in the 60s, 70s, and he passed away about 10 or 15 years before this story starts, okay? So, anyway, one of the songs that he played on, that I talk about, he did the da 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 on Jaws. Okay, that's what my buddies over here were doing. Got it? Okay.
There you go.
So, where am I? Okay. So I want to tell you about Small World. These two guys, David over here, and Rex. I didn't meet them till they came to this church, but Rex over here, Dad played the drums, and his dad and my dad played together. And once a year, they'd go to the jazz thing up in Sun Valley, Idaho, and he used to ski with my dad. Rex did. It's cool, huh? And he tells the story that my dad did a rain dance, and then he couldn't stop the snow, so it snowed for a long time. And then he also said my dad could walk in the snow and not leave tracks. Is that so? So that's his story. David, over here, when my dad retired, he moved to Santa Fe. Well, David's from Santa Fe. They played together, too. So it's a small world, isn't it? But Bonnie called in the middle of the week, and she wanted to do a little interlude for you guys. So play Jaws here we go. I'm staying out of it now.
Oh, Lord. We're just going to do a little, right?
Come on now. Oh, yeah.
Never know how much I love you. Never know how much I care. When you put your arms around me, I get a fever that's so hard to bear. You give me fever in the morning, fever all through the night. Fever when you kiss me, fever when you hold me tight.
That's enough. Yeah. Thank you.
That was so fun. Anyway.
Do you want to tell them why we're singing Fever?
Yeah, I did while you guys were.
Okay.
I'll tell them again.
Okay.
My dad did the bass with Peggy Lee on Fever. So that's why these guys are playing this. So this is kind of honor my dad. But let's get to the story, okay? We're finally getting to this story. And I never named it before. It was always my Father's Day story. But now I named it. It's called Good Intentions. Okay, here we go. About 25 years ago, when I just came to this church, I was not a practitioner. Been here about a year. And I had taken a foundations class, and that's about all I knew about this place. And in those days, the practitioner who did the pulpit that day, did the prayer, was on call all week to go to hospitals and visits and stuff like that. So the lady who was supposed to go called me up, and she said, look, the minister wants you to go visit this doctor over at Community Memorial Hospital, and I can't go. Will you do it? And I thought, oh, what an honor, you know, me. And so I said, sure, I'll do it. And she said, be careful, because he's really grumpy. I said, okay, thanks, and hung up. And then I said, oh, my gosh, what did I do? I don't even visit myself in the hospital, you know. What do I say? What do I do? I'm representing the church, blah, 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 all those things. So I called up the minister, and I said, I'm going to go visit this doctor in the hospital. What do I say? What do I do? And she said, you'll get more out of it than you give. I said, that's it? She said, that's it. And so I hung up, and I said, oh, thanks, you know. So anyway, I called him up. Oh, and also the minister said, be careful. He's really a grump. So two people had told me he's really a grump and he's a doctor. And so anyway, I'm on my way there. I call him up and I said, I want to come visit you. I'm from the church. He said, come here at 3:00. And he hung up on me. I said, thanks, you know. So I go to Community Memorial Hospital there, go into his room at 3:00, all the time saying, what do I say? What do I do? I don't know anything, blah, 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 in my head. And I sat down, he was fast asleep, frail old man, fast asleep. So I sat at the foot of his bed till 3:30. He didn't wake up, so I said, hey, I did what I was supposed to do, I'm out of here. Went home, and my wife said, I don't think you did what you're supposed to do. She's kind of my conscience, she's going to be a minister. Anyway, so I said, I better go back. By this time, it was about 6:00. It was about Christmas time, so it was dark already. There's a little few days before Christmas. So I go back up to his room, and all the way, what do I say? What do I do? Blah, 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 blah. And walked into his room, and just as I walked in, he was putting a cassette in his cassette player. That's how long ago it was. And it was Stan Getz, who I listened to a lot of jazz music growing up, and I said to him, my name's Fred Mondragon, I'm from the church, and I said, my dad played that kind of music. And he goes, he was like half, Joe Mondragon. He kind of came to life. And he said, oh, see, he said, I'm a retired doctor. I'm really a musician. I used to play the drums and play with your dad and listen to him on the record and play with him. And he said, I belong to the Doctor's Symphony Orchestra, and I was a cymbal player. And I'm a musician. I'm not a doctor. He said, oh, yeah. And just about that time, the phone rang, and it was his daughter calling from New York to wish him Happy Christmas. And he says to her, hey, guess who's here to visit me? Joe Mondragon's son, and he's here to visit me. And just about that time, the nurse came in and said, sorry, sir, you have to leave, and close the thing, and I'm standing there. So I leave, and I'm walking down the hall, and I'm going, all I said is my name is Fred Mondragon. And my dad played that kind of music. And that's all I said. I walked down the road. So this is the three things I learned from that story. You ready? Okay. This is what I said as I was walking down the hallway, leaving. Spirit works in strange ways, okay? And this is what the minister said. You get more out of it than you give. Is that so? And this is what I changed two things on this. I used to say, sometimes all you got to do is show up with love. But I changed that based on this. I took sometimes out of there, and I said this. This is my final one. All you got to do is show up with love and good intentions. And that's,
so
and that's my story.
Thank you, Fred. That's great. Thank you. Thank you. I'm so glad we did that, right? Isn't that fun? Such a great story, and Fred, you told it so beautifully. I love it. And I really thank you, boys in the band, for the added accompaniment. And Karen, too. I was telling them back in my office that I think I threw my neck out because this is a very gyrating kind of Sunday. Gyrated quite like that for a while. That first that hymn and then fever and what are we going to do? Anyway, all right, so I want to talk a little bit about the sacred inadequacy that I heard in that story, okay? Because that's what this talk is about. It's downward facing God. God that understands that if our path is not only to rise up and transcend our humanness, but it's also to descend into our humanness in order to find grace and goodness. And that's what I see Fred doing. That's what I saw Fred doing. I'm assuming from what he said that it sounded like he felt like he was not up to the job. He was feeling inadequate. He was feeling like he couldn't handle it. He was making all kinds of plans about what he should do, right? Now, we could call that the first force, that there's this part in him, let's call it inadequacy, that's wanting to express, that's wanting to hold Fred back, that's wanting to speak for Fred. And then there's this other force, this discerning force that says, wait, maybe if you just show up, something will be better. And so the two forces come together, and Fred shows up in the third force, which is the hospital room, which is the interaction with this third man, and then a miracle happens. The miracle looked like, hi, I'm Fred Mondragon. My father used to play jazz. But then he gets a result that is totally unexpected, and that's part of how you know that it's a third force event, is that something comes up that's unexpected that you wouldn't have thought up on your own, but you have opened yourself up to a greater possibility, and you often open yourself up to a greater possibility by acknowledging that there are two forces interacting with each other that are pushing against each other, and then stepping back and allowing and making space for the third. Making space for the third so that the miracle can happen, so that the fourth can be born. And you know that it's a fourth if it can have babies, okay? You know what I mean by that? You know, Fred said the story happened back in the Stone Ages when we all had cassette tapes. Oh my goodness. Back, do you remember those days? What a hardship that was, those cassette tapes, man. You know? But for years, Fred has been telling this story, and it's been influencing many, many people, probably 1,000 people by now, because you've told it many times, not only in here, but in class. So the third force event is something that continues to ripple outward and outward and outward and outward, and we trust the ripples. We trust the ripples when they happen, or when we happen, either one. So one thing about, let's say, sacred inadequacy. Do you know, have you noticed, that when you are mired in sacred inadequacy or some perception of inadequacy, either if it's a perception that there is something wrong with you, or there is something wrong with somebody else, or there is something wrong with the world, doesn't that feel like that completely occupies your mind and there is no other reality? Am I correct about that? Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm not the only one, I see. Because, you know, all of those things, when you, have you ever gotten on a wild tear about somebody who's, you know, you perceive as bad, right? You know how that is, right? Anyway? Yeah. Right. And you can't shut yourself up, right? You know, and I know Gina was saying last week, you know, just tell the voice to shut up, and that's appropriate sometimes. And sometimes it's appropriate to look at that voice and say, let me shine the light on you. You know, if you've ever lived in the South, and I've experienced this in North Carolina, and it may happen here, I haven't experienced it here, but if you've got cockroaches, and you know they're scuttling around your kitchen looking for crumbs, and then you turn the light on and they go whoosh, right? Anybody experience that? Yeah, it's super fun, right? yeah. The same thing happens when we start to really, instead of telling that voice to shut up, we welcome it and we embrace it and we look at it. And really what we're doing is we're seeking greater understanding of that negative voice that tells us that there is something wrong with us, wrong with somebody else, or wrong with the world, right? We're just seeking greater understanding. Now, one of the myths, one of the stories that voice tells us is that it tells us that it is the whole truth and nothing but the truth. The truth is that it may be true. I think everybody is inadequate at something, right? I'm not very good at softball. I remember when we used to have a church softball team, I went to watch one time, and I think it was Greg made a home run, and he crossed home plate, and I said, Greg, you made a goal, yay! He just rolled his eyes at me. But, you know, we're all inadequate at something, and I think it's more about recognizing, is this inadequacy real? Is it the truth? And if it's the truth, is it the whole truth? Even if you are inadequate at something, even if you are ill-prepared to go and visit a sick person in a hospital room because you don't know what to say, there is, chances are, something greater in you that knows exactly what to say, something as simple as, my name is Fred Mondragon. So our willingness to look at our perception of inadequacy, but not marry it. Don't take it on a date and bring it home and have sex with it and then marry it, okay? Just, anybody? Oh, okay, yeah. Just look at it with a bit of detachment. You know what, I think it's time for an elbow touching. This helps people sometimes discern the truth from the whole truth. So we're gonna touch our elbow, touch your own elbow. Please don't touch anybody else's elbow. It's not that kind of a church, okay? Touch your elbow, and are you touching your body? Yes. So it is true that you are touching your body. Now, are you touching your entire body? No. Right. So that's the way truth works. At times, we are touching a portion of truth that might be truth in the true in the relative world, or true sometimes, or true in this particular incidence, but it is not the entire truth. In Fred's world, there is this perceived truth, this sacred flaw of inadequacy, but there is a whole other Fred that is much bigger than that sacred inadequacy, right? And the same thing is true for whatever it is you're holding, whether it's about yourself, whether it's about another person, whether it's about the state of the world. There is a whole greater truth that is greater than the perception that you are holding. Can you sit with that for just a minute? Can you think of somebody or someone or something where you're holding a truth, a huge perception of inadequacy, and can you kind of put your finger on that truth, not literally if the person's sitting next to you, but but just put your finger on that truth and say, am I touching the whole truth about this person or about this aspect of myself or this condition in the world? And it's like your elbow, you're not. You're not touching the whole truth about that person or the world or yourself, okay? So we open up for the spaciousness of that to emerge, and that allows something greater to come forth. That allows a miracle, like Fred experienced, to come forth. And we don't always know it when we see it. It's often a shift, an internal shift, a shift in consciousness. But it's our detachment, our willingness to release, our willingness to tell the truth about the truth that allows that to happen. The other thing about Fred's story is... You know, so you have this perception of sacred inadequacy, and not only do you think it's the whole truth, but you think it's really bad. There is no place in our minds for goodness about our sacred inadequacies. There's a story told by Ajahn Brahm, who is a Buddhist monk who lives in Australia. Thank you. Thank you. No, it's good. David's my prompter down here sometimes. Whenever I have to remember a date or something or whatever, it's David. He lives in Australia, and actually I think we're featuring his book in a couple of months. It's called Don't Worry, Be Grumpy, which I really like. Yeah. But anyway, we read his book a while back. It's called, this other book is called Who Moved My Truckload of Dung? Another catchy title that makes you just want to read it, right? Anyway, in this book, the first story in the book, which is kind of the touchstone for the book, is the story about how Jean Brome made this wall, and he was an engineer, and he really knew how to build walls, and he was very, very, very meticulous about it, and it had 1,000 bricks in it, and he was building it for his monastery, and he finished it, and when he stepped back, he looked at it, and he was admiring his wall, and then he looked over here, and there were 2 bricks that were slightly off. And then every time he looked at that wall, that's what he saw. He said that when he would take people on tours, or when the people would come for tours in the monastery, he would always volunteer to be the tour guide so he could avoid that wall. Or maybe like stand in front of the flawed place, right? You know? And then finally, he was on a tour where somebody did actually look at the wall, and he said, it's a beautiful wall. You made a beautiful wall. And Jean Brome said, well, what about those 2 bricks? And the guy said, I don't really see those 2 bricks. I see 998 bricks that are in their perfect place. And those 2 just kind of make it interesting. So what if that's true about your flaws, your perceived sacred inadequacies, or what you're calling unholy inadequacies? What if they are really holy inadequacies? And what if they are not even inadequacies, they are really adequacies? In the absolute, it all just is. It all just is. There's no up in infinity, there's no down in infinity, there's no right, there's no wrong, there's just this grace that surrounds everything, and everything has a purpose, you know? So that's another thing to look at, is there a way that we can look at our sacred flaws and truly sanctify them, truly make them sacred? You know, with Fred, in the story that he told about going into the hospital with nothing to say, being completely clueless, being out of his mind with ignorance. Sorry. I like to tease people. I can't help it. Can't control myself. Okay. So anyway, going in there with just, he went in there like an open book, right? There was humility there. There was openness because he didn't have an agenda, because he didn't know what the agenda should be. You know, I have a friend who was brought up in a Catholic school, and he used to attend dances, co-ed dances, and he'd be dancing with his little girlfriend, you know, his back. Maybe they were dancing to Fever, whatever. Okay. All right. Yeah, I'm going to sing it again and do more gyrating, and I got to protect my neck. Anyway, he'd be dancing with a woman and a nun, you know, think of the meanest nun you know would come up and separate them and say, leave enough room for the Holy Spirit, Mr. Burkhart, right? And don't you be looking at her patent leather shoes. You guys know what that means, right? You know that story? Okay, I'll explain it after church if you want. Yeah. Some people, you know, they just have these minds that think of stuff. I don't think there's anybody here that would be offended if I said that. Any children? Yeah, she's old enough. You know the thing. Does anybody not know why the patent? Okay, so there's a thing in Catholic schools where the boys would try and look at the girls' underpants by seeing it reflected in their patent leather shoes. Guys, am I right? Does that work? Or yeah. What Hugh goes, it's disappointing. Is that what you said? Oh, okay, that's better than what you really said. Yeah. Welcome to the Ventura Center for Spiritual Living. We do things slightly differently. Anyway, so the point of this whole thing about leave enough room for the Holy Spirit is that when we have this death grip on our inadequacies and we are saying, this is definitely a bad thing about me, this is something that I should hide, this is something that I shouldn't even talk about, this is something that I should slap into submission with affirmations or with prayer, this is something that I can't even look at because it's so bad, all of that is not leaving enough room for the Holy Spirit, or the wholeness of spirit. And wholeness is what we teach here. Wholeness is really the key. You know, the Holy Spirit is about wholeness. Allowing all of God, all of God is right where we are, and allowing that to come forth and celebrate and express in the happy moments in our lives, in the despairing moments of our life, in the darkness, in the light, in all of that, the whole of spirit, the wholeness of spirit is right there, right now, waiting and willing and wondering, how can I express in a greater way to allow myself to come out and play in this beautiful manifestation of me? Ha ha, how about that? All right. So it's almost time for me to stop. I'm committed to ending somewhat on time today because we have a board meeting. But I do want to say that, that this stuff is incredibly powerful when we use it on ourselves. It's also incredibly powerful to use it silently for other people. You don't say to the other person, hi, Mark, I'm pointing at your bad spot right now, and I know it's not the entire truth, okay? I know it's not the entire truth. You just do it silently in your mind. You recognize that you are labeling somebody as all bad. You're getting fixated on their all badness and making that be the whole truth about them. And it also works for the world. Because really, in truth, in spiritual truth, everything that seems to be falling apart, everything that seems to be crumbling has a higher purpose. Everything is coming together for a manifestation. It is God descending, not that God is up, but God descending into the depths of humanity and expressing in new and wonderful ways that are here to inspire us. Part of the inspiration that has happened in this center because of certain events that have happened, the Thomas fires, political climate, a lot of divisiveness, an increased focus on how we are excluding others in our lives. Part of the focus has been an increase in kindness. I'm working with our movement to try and effect a greater presence of kindness in this teaching, so that we can use kindness as a preemptive strike. And that we can use kindness as a post-emptive strike against anything that seems out of order, or anything that seems out of love, or anything that seems like it is unholy. And if something unholy happens, then we use that. We see it, we claim it, we know it, but we know it is not the whole truth of existence. And we call it forth. We call our unholy inadequacies holy inadequacies, and then we live like that truth is true by being kind, by dispelling the narrative that tells us that we are separate, by removing the veil of Maya, the veil of illusion, that says that we are not connected, because the truth is that we are all connected all of the time in the one which is love. So let us know that for ourselves, let us know that for our friends and relatives and strangers, and let us know it for the entire world as we move into prayer.